Welcome, folks, to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. Every week, diving deep into the truth of Catholic social teaching and restoring all things in Christ.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
I'm Dr. Bud Maher.
We are joining you from these United States of America, here in the middle of the country, Des Moines, Iowa! Wah, 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 wah! Where we are based at Iowa Catholic Radio. You can go to iowacatholicradio.com to listen live, donate, find out all that's going on there at our good home station. You can also download Iowa Catholic Radio app and also listen live or recorded anywhere that you have data. Of course, many of you listen on either other stations or the podcasts, and we appreciate you doing so. But here in Des Moines, Iowa, Bud and I both work at our sponsor of the show, Mercy College of Health Sciences. I am the senior advisor for mission initiatives there, director of the Center for Human Flourishing. Bud, tell people what you do for the old sponsor.
I'm the associate provost and presently not an associate to anyone. So if you know a friend or a family member who would make a good provost, you could send them my direction.
That would be amazing if like how did you guys get your new provost? Mm-hmm. Well, the magic of radio.
Finder's fee. If Dr. Henry's listening, finder's fee. I kid.
I like that. So mchs.edu, speaking of finding, you can find your way into a healthcare career. That was a really bad plug, Bud. So you rescue me here, mchs.edu.
I mean, if you want to find your way into a healthcare career, it's as possible now as it ever was. I know that post-pandemic and just with the ups and downs of our country recently, talking to medical centers across the state and a lot of needs right now. So it's an exciting time to be teaching at Mercy College of Health Sciences, training the next generation, forming the next generation of healthcare leaders in line with the legacy of the Sisters of Mercy.
mchs.edu to go check out what we're up to see what people have in store for you. I know that we have exciting things like signing day where, you know, it's not going to be signing day like you're signing up for football, but you're signing up for Mercy College to sign up to for the Ministry of Health and Healing. So that'll also be fun. Check out all the cool things that we're doing. So, Bud, speaking of cool things that we're doing, man, I'm really hitting it out of the park with a really bad transitions. Speaking of cool people, we have our buddy Dave Plinsky, who works at DeSales Media. They did this really interesting study of intentional disciples. A lot of times people, when they read that they've done surveys of Catholics, I have to admit, it's like anybody who broadly calls themselves Catholics, the DeSales Media folks wanted to talk to people who understood themselves as intentional disciples, people who are trying to live out the faith and spread it, and really ask them to sort of really tack down, drill down on some of the questions they had about how they feel formed, ways that they could feel helped. So they produced this survey. And we're not only going to just talk about that, but in continuing with our theme of new beginnings, you know, I just think there's a lot that what Dave has been up to naturally sort of revolves around the concerns that we've had here in the new year, Bud.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this interview. You know, for a lot of our listeners to the show, you know, grounded in a parish or in Catholic life, deepening your spiritual life. And so all of us, I think, are asking questions like in today's world with so many complexities and just the challenges that come with even making ends meet, but, you know, finding time to deepen our spiritual lives. We're all asking questions about how do I become more of an intentional disciple, but then how do I invite people into that as well? And I know from meeting and spending time with Dave as part of the Church Communications Ecology Project, like that's a key piece of what they're doing. So I'm really eager for this interview.
I don't have enough time to bring it up to him because we would take way too long. One of my favorite things about Dave is he's one of the most humane, great listeners. You guys are going to tell just by listening that he's just a great guy. But like through a lot of like dumb inside jokes, he's in my phone as Dave, Dave the CCEP robot. And I even forget why, because he's not robotic in any way. Yeah. But every time I talk to him, I'm all like, oh, it's Dave the CCEP robot. And so now, Dave, if you're now subsequently listening to the show, hats off for being such a good sport when it comes to bizarre Bo Bonner jokes. It fills my heart to know that he didn't get too offended by it at all.
I think it was when we went to Carnegie Mellon and we had some folks speak to us about androids and robotics and where the technology is going. And I can't recall exactly what sparked it, but we said, like, if there's one member of the project that would most likely be like artificial intelligence, who would it be? And the joke was, I mean, it's hard to convey this. You'll, listeners, like you said, will get some sense of this, but Dave is probably the least likely. Like, yes, he's so very human. And
So we decided that's what the robots would do. They would, of course, choose the guy. That. But in saying this out loud, they really should take the show away from us.
That's right.
Folks, stick around. I promise the interview is going to be way more coherent and way more wonderful. Dave Plinsky from DeSales Media talking about intentional discipleship. Coming up, this is The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Budmar, thank you for joining the show. We'll talk to you right after this. We're back with The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Budmar joining you this week. Thank you for listening to the show. It's wonderful to have you with us. Appreciate all of our listeners, whether you're listening live on Iowa Catholic Radio, other media stations that pick us up, then of course through the magic of podcast land. We're glad to have you with us today on our show. We have David Plitzky, who, let me just tell you, guys, there's an emergent theme, but let's just be honest about it now. Yep. Who have we been interviewing when we're talking about new beginnings, but the friends that we made through, that's right, the CCEP program, the Catholic Communication and Ecology program, where we got a whole group of people from across the United States together to talk about emergent questions with the church and faith, and how that had to do with digital ecology and how things, how communication in the church is going to work. So we have someone else who is a good friend from this program, but precisely the people you all need to hear asking the appropriate questions about new beginnings here when it comes to the church dealing with the digital frontier. Dave, thanks for coming on the show, and please explain more about what you do so people can run into your good work, especially right out of the gate, this very important survey, essentially, that you were able to cull all sorts of information for people to download and process.
Oh, Bud, great to be here with you guys. Thank you for having me. So like you said, Dave Plisky, I work as Director of Product and Innovation for DeSales Media, DeSales like St. Francis DeSales, our patron saint. So we're at desalesmedia.org, by the way, just put that out there right away. I wanted to talk about this research study that we did recently. So we published the results last year in 2022 of this research that we did on intentional discipleship. And so we essentially reached out to devout Catholics, and we wanted to find out really two things. What are the journeys like of intentional disciples, and what are their unmet needs? I can kind of go into all of that as you like, but yeah, that's sort of what I wanted to talk about, some of the things that we found from the study.
And I think it's important for people to, we were joking around on air that you can hear all sorts of surveys about Catholics, and depending on who you get a chance to talk to, you're going to hear, you know, all sorts of stuff. People will sort of lead with, we talked with random, Catholics at dog parks, and turns out they're not Trinitarian theologians or whatever. As you pointed out, people might not think about this, but devout Catholics and what, understood themselves as devout Catholics and what they're up to and what their hopes, dreams, and fears are, actually underutilized as a group to ask what they're up to. So I guess just in that regard, what was it like to go find exactly devout Catholics who don't often get, specifically queried about some of these questions?
Yeah, very difficult, because there are very few of us, if I could be so bold. And probably some of your listeners are among them too. And I know that, this is a particularly difficult audience to reach, because normally when you do this kind of stuff, so we're not a research firm. We partnered with a Catholic research firm called Vinia Research to do this work, because we don't normally do surveys and studies and things like this. But for this one, we needed help. So normally what happens is, we did a qualitative research first, where we did a bunch of, in-depth interviews to make sure that we kind of were asking the right questions of this and getting to what we wanted to know. And then we designed the quantitative research, which was this long survey. And it was in-depth, and normally what you can do is just rent a list of people who state that they're Catholics, self-identified Catholics. We wanted people in the U.S. and so forth. And the first questions that we asked were just some screener questions that basically made sure that you're in the right place. And when we asked, are you in the U.S., are you Christian, are you Catholic, and are you Are you going to mass at least once a week? We got zero responses. So this is just, and I mean, that kind of, it was what you expect, right? I mean, this, fortunately, you know, unfortunately, this was still during COVID. I don't know if it was fortunate or unfortunate, but it was still during COVID in 2021 for a lot, in a lot of places. And so, you know, we tried to provide that also, like, you know, we let people attend online because that's a lot, that's what a lot of people only could do at the time. And still, you know, really just getting nothing. And so we ended up partnering with a bunch of organizations. So we basically made a list of Catholic organizations who I thought their lists would be full of intentional disciples. And we said, look, what's in it for you is we will give you the data that we get. What's in it for us is we can reach all the people we need to reach. And it worked. We were able to get over 3,000 responses, which, you know, I think we only needed 500 to be statistically significant, but we got many more than that because I wanted to be able to slice and dice the data and still have it be statistically significant.
Dave, for me, it's I'm sorry, keep going.
No, please, please.
Oh, for me, it's fascinating to hear the background of how you first tried to identify intentional disciples. I'm sure during the actual study and like collecting the results, you all probably had some conversations about like the very nature of discipleship and what are the pros and cons of thinking in this manner. So growing up evangelical, most members of evangelical churches are high commitment. Like if you are attending a Bible church, you know, it's usually like a very intentional decision and something that's like, it's a big part of my life. In Catholicism, of course, you have this phenomenon of, you know, like folks think of themselves as Catholics because they are, they're baptized Catholic, but for all sorts of reasons and varying levels of commitment. Like as the team like started to process the results, did you get into like conversations about like, and talking about intentional discipleship, are like we sort of like creating a team A and team B, or what, you know, how do you balance that against just like the benefits of the sacraments, like in and of themselves?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And we there was a lot of discussion about like, how do we make sure that we're really hitting the target audience segment that we want to be reaching? I'm sorry if I'm using marketing terms, but I do come out of marketing discipline. I've been a marketer my whole life. You know, it's hard because we're really talking about the interior life, right? Where the discipleship is following Jesus and all of that it entails. Only a portion of that is would anyone be able to necessarily see through your actions and so forth, like going to mass or something like that. So, but at the same time, we didn't want to just say, "Hey, are you an intentional disciple of Jesus Christ?" Because out of humility, I think a lot of people who are would maybe say that they're not yet. And meanwhile, some people probably say that they would be.
That's what I'm imagining. This guy's like, sure I am.
Yeah. So we instead we kind of came up with all these different ways that we thought we could know, and we tried to be generous because we didn't want to be limiting, you know, eliminating people unnecessarily, but you know, giving people the benefit of the doubt because you never know where someone is in their spiritual journey. But
sure.
So we made sure that we removed people who. So like I said, we had those screener questions, and then we removed people who said that faith is not a significant part or faith is limited to a familial or cultural part of who they are. So to your point, Bud, you know, we kind of tried to take out those people who are not, are just cultural Catholics type of thing. Like they just grew up going to mass or something. We removed people who never pray outside of mass and removed people who said that faith has zero impact on their family, social, or interior life. So that kind of culled the list down to,
I see.
I think we were left with three. Yeah. So I think that helped. I will say, you know, I was fortunate enough to go to a conference from the Evangelical Catholic last week, and this conversation was happening a lot. And I felt like it's possible that there's even after culling the list, I think there are still those who probably are intentional disciples, according to maybe Sherry Weddell's, you know, dropping the nets for Christ kind of definition, and those who aren't. And so we're actually still working with the data, and we're still working with Vineyard Research on further developing this. I think in the next version that we'll release, we'll kind of go deeper and say, all right, let's pull this apart and say where are they in these stages? And by the way, that's kind of one of the where this all started. Like, what you may be wondering, why are you focusing on intentional disciples in the first place? The reason is because. So again, I told you I'm a marketer. I think of things through this marketing lens. So, you know, we have the the marketing funnel. It's this sort of thing that says we're going to move you from being someone who doesn't even know about our brand to becoming, you know, a regular, you know, lifelong customer, ideally, right? This is why we have loyalty programs and so forth. But actually, you don't want someone who's just a loyal customer. You want someone who's called a brand advocate, someone who's like, this is like your Harley Davidson guy that's got a tattoo on his bicep, yeah. Right? Because like he just, yeah, or like a sneakerhead who just can't wait to talk. He's always wants to talk about the latest pair of Jordans or something like that. What does that sound like? That sounds like intentional. That's a missionary disciple, right? That's someone who is so filled with the joy of Jesus Christ, they can't help but talk about it. And so if that's true, then that's who's doing evangelization. That is the front lines of evangelization. Those are the people who are going to bring people into the church and down through the discipleship funnel, helping them to encounter Christ in themselves and so forth. So if that's true, then we wanted to focus on them. How can we equip them better? That was really kind of what led to all this.
Well, I know that we've had, I remember having wonderful conversations with all of you folks at DeSales that were part of the CCEP and getting at the very idea that whatever you're going to do in the quantitative realm to try to figure this out is always going to miss, because in some ways, like you said, like faith is interior. And even when you're thinking about, oh, what conversation did I have? You have a lot of questions about what people feel they need to do in order to evangelize. Like they think they could, and a surprising amount of people were like, felt comfortable even with the concept. It's they weren't sure how you would really do it. What are the mechanics, as it were? And of course, that to me is like part of the issue here is it's hard to measure that. You all might be like, you know, this person over here might be the catalyst that makes someone convert. But that conversation has like 12 years of brewing, as it were, before it comes to fruition. And so a lot of when we go, to those listening, for me, I can get pigeonholed as the guy who doesn't like any quantitative evidence, because I'm really worried about everything being flattened to information and utility. But for me, I'm with all sorts of people that we in the church sort of just like throw stuff on the wall and kind of hope like the Holy Spirit makes multiple noodles stick. And that seems like a waste of resources, maybe not the best use of money. So I'm all for, let's say, like being intentional and asking, you know, what sort of fruits come about. But this is to me, that's why it was so wonderful to actually see this data, is I was immediately, you know, in my mind, whisk back to when we were having these conversations. I think we were at Latrobe, Pennsylvania at the time, asking about how you sort of measure something whose immediate fruits wouldn't be discernible. And so this is a wonderful way to think about this, is maybe it's hard to decide how many types of interactions an intentional disciple will have with others that will then go on to bear fruit that people convert. But certainly you can ask the people who are, like you said, going to be the brand representatives, what sort of thing made them get to where they are and what sort of thing helps them, you know, exude that sort of brand to other people.
That's right. That's exactly right. And so speaking of, you know, what kind of things helped them in their journeys, that's one of the questions that we asked is, which of the following had the most meaningful impact on your faith life? And the top answers were prayer at 81%, followed by sacrament, clergy and religious, print and digital media, Bible study, and small group ministry was number 6. I'm not going to rattle off the whole list here, but prayer being the top, and that, you know, that's not surprising. That's exactly where I would expect it to be, followed by sacraments and so forth.
Yeah, Dave, there's this.
Sometimes we get, I just want to mention too, sometimes we get these answers that are not exactly surprising, but it's nice to have data backing it up so that it's not a hunch. You're not basing right. everything on what your experience is, right? This is actually a little bit more standardized than that. Oh, sorry, what were you saying, Bud?
Yeah, sorry about that. I'm cutting you off today. I'm sorry. So there's this helpful article on Catholic Link about 5 things even devout Catholics can do to go deeper in discipleship, and it kind of distills what you found through the research. You mentioned things like prayer and mass attendance and retreats and whatnot. Did you, in the conversations, did you start to see the sorts of things that are like obstacles to going deeper? Like what sort of things about modern life kind of get in the way of that?
I think there's a couple ways I would answer that. One of them is through, we asked, when we're talking about evangelization, we were surprised to find how not proactive, how inactive this segment of the population is in sharing their faith. We found that only 52% are moderately or extremely proactive in sharing their faith. And we asked why and what are the barriers to evangelization. And so to your point, the top one was situational appropriateness, which was kind of under our cultural barriers, you know, kind of banner. Second being lack of confidence. And third being lack of knowing how to start conversations. So I do think that, you know, in today's culture, it just becomes more and more difficult for people who are not really confident, not just in their faith, but how to present it in a way that actually is, you know, not off-putting to people, right? We have to recognize, you know, how different, how polarized, you know, society has become.
So
I think that's one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've gone this far without going major dork wise. We've talked about stuff that is making sense. So I'm going to run it. This is where I think the McLuhan, Walter Ong, some of the things we read in CCEP really show up in ways we don't think. I was struck how often people will say, "Oh, I don't really feel comfortable." Situational awareness, right? Like I actually feel like I know this group. I actually feel like I know about the faith. And I feel like if I had to go, you know, it's like if you had to get a driver's license, you had to get like an evangelical license, right? You had to like be able to pass a test before you would be given the green light. I think a lot of these people would go pass the test. What they wouldn't be good at is talking. And it's interesting that we go like, oh, yeah, well, this is like the faith. And you go, well, maybe it's actually that we're all bad at orality. If we talk about this in terms of media, right, we're, you know, most of the, you know, I think, tell me if I'm wrong, you had a lot of what you would call late stage boomers and then like Gen X and then a lot of millennials. I would say that in some ways, like that was the main group. And it sort of, it looked like you got a lot of 25 to 45 year olds. Do you think that's sort of fair?
Yeah, age-wise, it was kind of almost a bell curve across generations. So we got the fewest from like Gen Z and the silent generation and then so forth. Yeah.
So as we think about that in terms of where we go, we have a lot of people who are both comfortable with digital media and then probably a lot of people who are comfortable with like consuming media. Like they know what shows to watch. They know what radio shows to listen to, Bob. Different things like that. But when it comes to orality, I'd actually probably throw out that people just aren't good at it in general. Like, it's interesting that you said the Harley Davidson guy, because I actually think it's easier for people to get a tattoo about the brands they care a lot about rather than talk about them. And to be fair about the brand thing also, I think that because of media saturation, we have that one teed up for us, right? Oh, well, you know, we saw the Grammys and someone was wearing this, or we watched the Super Bowl and these commercials were on. We don't have that sort of multimedia starting points to get started talking about the faith. And we're all mostly not that great at having conversations without that sort of kickstart.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that's totally true. The more mainstream something is, the easier it is going to just be to be able to pick up a conversation with anyone about it. Not just because they're going to know what you're talking about, but because it's somehow socially acceptable to bring those things up, right? And a lot of the time, you know, we're taught that politics and religion are the things that you just don't bring up, right? So yeah, there's definitely that sort of fear of stuff. I will say also, I like your example. Well, we're talking about people, you like you used yourself, for example. I think you would pass the written test. Actual, what do they call it? Like where you actually are driving with the person test, right?
That's, right.
So I think in the same way, we would pass the written test. But then when you actually go to have a conversation with someone, I think this is your point. That's the difficult part. Because, and you know what it is there's so much listening involved. And you have to get down to the fact that this is a person. This is like an individual. And if you're not ready to accompany them, whatever they decide to tell you, then you're not really going to be effective in any of this stuff. Because it's not about finding, you know, just waiting for the perfect moment to drop your awesome bombshell of a Catholic fact. There's nothing to do with it, right? It's about, you know, actually, you know, I can't use another word, accompanying them. It's about listening and just trying to, you know what it is? It's seeing Christ in them. That's the best way I can say it.
Well, so we're getting ready to get up here on the break for the first segment, but I think this is great. And I think I've figured out a way that people don't think of a second connotation. Accompany has, I don't know, a lot of emotive things. We sort of like load it with a lot of ideas about what we think it might have in mind. But of course, accompany, one of the best ways to think of it is, of course, musical accompaniment. And that's really what we're talking about. Like, if you know how to play an instrument that accompanies someone else's, that I think is more what we need to learn how to do than merely this idea of like, we're going to walk hand in hand, or I'm going to look in their eyes and they'll know it's time to listen. It is something to the effect of, do you know how to play piano to someone else's lead vocals? And that really does, right. That's where we begin to meet, like you say, to make the lame metaphor, the music that is Christ. Okay, we got to stop for this segment. This is The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher, stick around. We'll be back right after this. Back with The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher joining you this week. Thank you for listening to the show. We're glad you're here with us, whether it's on Iowa Catholic Radio, all of the other stations that you might have heard us from, or if you're listening through podcast, which I can only imagine is your favorite podcast broadcaster or whatever those are called. Bud, do you have like a certain t-shirt of like where you get your podcast? Are you, we were talking about brands. I didn't know if you're a devotee, like Skitcher. I don't know. I'm making up words now. Radio Narwhal, things like that.
I'm very boring when it comes to that. Like, there was a pre-built app on my iPhone and it just says podcast. That's,
Dave, you're listening. What you need to do for the faith is get a pre-built app on iPhones. I think you can go the U2 route. Remember the album everyone hated that was on there? Mm-hmm. So anyway, well, letting the cat out of the bag.
Yeah, this is like such a perfect example. How dare you give me something for free?
Exactly. Sort of like God's grace, right? Yeah, no, okay. So anyway, we're back with the second segment with David Plinsky. Dave, go ahead and reintroduce yourself and tell people where they can get this wonderful survey and work that you guys did over at DeSales Media.
Yeah, sure. So like you just said, DeSales Media, my name is Dave Plinsky. We did a study on intentional disciples. You can get it at DeSales Media, DeSales Media.org/discipleship. You can download the whole report for free and check out whatever else we do too.
See, I think it's interesting. You know, we ended up the last segment talking about how maybe part of the problem is we don't speak well to one another. It's like that Kevin bit from The Office, and that might be one of the hindrances of sharing the gospel. I also think it's truly the case, Dave, that some people want it to be real easy, and it's like, about availability. But you go, there's never been more availability of about resources, about the faith. A lot of the times in the digital world, it's actually the overabundance, it seems, that begins to get the to be the problem. So I know that, like you said, one of the wonderful things about getting a project like yours done is you already think about what you can do the next time you do it and to, you know, sort of get it better. Is that something that's already on your mind about asking people, not about the sheer amount of information that's out there, but sort of how they decide where they're going to go look when they actually have questions?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely, I mean, look, anyone who's ever been a part of trying to make change happen will tell you that the change management aspect is always the difficult part. I really believe this. Creating content is the easy thing. Getting distribution is the difficult thing, you know, and this is true in every industry I've worked in. You know, it's a noisy world out there. Like you said, you know, there's never been more resource. There have never been more Catholic resources or any other types of resources available to people. And yet, you know, we have so much disaffiliation. Why? Because it's not reaching them, either literally or figuratively. It's not reaching people. So yeah, I mean, absolutely. One of the reasons that we did this study was not just to learn the data. This is not an academic exercise. We're trying to direct our, you know, we're trying to be good stewards of our resources and get the data before we actually take action. And so, yeah, we're looking for, you know, some of that white space in here in this report that kind of tells us, this is a place that we can play. Some of the things that really jumped out to me were around spiritual direction and retreats, both of which were particularly a lot lower than I would have expected from such a devout group of Catholics. You know, namely, we heard that 20%, only 20% of respondents are receiving spiritual direction. And a really wild stat, of people who have already received spiritual direction in the past but stopped, 41% said that they don't know how to find someone for spiritual direction. So it's like, you already have found someone for spiritual direction. What's happening here?
Right.
Like, we really have a disconnect. And then it, among retreats, and this is a really long study. I'm like furiously flipping through pages to see if I can get to the stat to give you the real numbers. And I'm vamping while I do so. Here we go. So going on retreat, 80% said that they have no or little level of strength in going on retreat, which to me says, I mean, 56% saying no level of retreat. That means I'm not going on retreat, right? And yet 56% admit to a medium or high need for growth in that area. So I think these are some areas we can, you know, hone in on tonight. And we have some ideas about how we might address those things.
Yeah, Dave, I hate to go too practical too quickly. I like Bo. I would love to talk about Marshall McLuhan and Walter Ong all afternoon too. I'm sure when parish leaders like priests, deacons, various kinds of ministers, when they hear about this study, like one question that's going to come to mind is, how do I create more intentional disciples in my parish? Did you have any thoughts about, like, after going through the study, I know you were talking to intentional disciples, but like if a Catholic leader came to you and said, like, is there anything I could take away from this study about create, like moving folks to like a higher level of intentional discipleship?
Yeah. So, I mean, the areas that we identified that were the areas of the faith that we felt like had, not that we felt like, that we heard have the lowest level of strength and the highest need for growth were the following: actively witnessing and sharing my faith with others. So we talked about that, evangelization, yep. Humility, going on retreat, sacrifice or taking up my cross, regularly going to confession, and then performing the spiritual and corporal works of mercy. So this is all across the faith, you know, all these different categories of the faith. We're finding, you know, ways that people could be really improving. So to me, that tells me that people need, like we were talking about before, some real accompaniment. How does that happen? You know, because what happens when you're accompanied is you feel heard, you feel known. There starts to become a level of holding one another accountable. You know, to these things that you actually want for yourself and recognize that the Lord wants for you. So I think the biggest thing I can encourage people is to get involved in small groups. And if there's not a culture of small groups at your parish, to partner with a ministry that makes that a fruitful reality in the parish. I say the parish doesn't have to happen at the parish level. It's just, it's simply where most people's faith, kind of the rubber meets the road. And it tends to be where people who are serious about the faith are already gathering in sub level. But you know, the Mass is a beautiful and holy thing, but it's not an opportunity to really get to know others. And we need that community aspect, or else it's just, our faith is just not going to be alive.
You know, if people need to be humiliated, I'll do it. And I'm a cross to carry. I mean, if you ask Bud,
he's not joking.
No, sort of like only, you know, moving on from half joking to getting at something a little bit more serious. I do wonder, when it comes to the formation, so people want to be heard, they want accompaniment. I go back to what we ended the last segment on about accompaniment as a music metaphor, just as much as it is like one about a journey and things like this. I think about who the best musicians are. And in our age of virtuoso performance that we sometimes overestimate, like, oh, well, the best person has to be the most singular voice, or like the person who is so distinctly themselves, you would never mistake them for anyone else. But there's actually a case to be made that the best musicians are people who could make even mediocre people sound great. You think about that in terms of like sports teams too. You know, the best people figure out like what is going on with the people at hand and figure out how to maybe even mute their own performance in order to accentuate what other people are about. And I don't know a better way to say what a saint is than something like that, that saints are the people that make the music of the normies running, you know, doing their best in this life, trying to go to heaven, to make that faith of theirs sing, to make it resonant. And so when we talk about, well, what should you be doing for your intentional disciples, the ones presumably that are going to accompany the people who aren't intentional disciples yet, I think that that's what you have to say. It's like, you know, you have to be familiar. You have to have faith in your faith. You have to be comfortable enough in your own faith that you don't always have to be playing like lead guitar, right? Like you don't need to be Slash at every instance of spreading the faith. And that might, I don't know if that necessarily changes our prerogatives or changes what we consider as important. It might change, though, how we talk to the already initiate about the best ways they can learn and serve others.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, in the same the way when you're talking, it's just like bizarre because I'm a musician myself and not a sports. I'm thinking about football the whole time when you're talking, and it's the same thing. You know, a quarterback is a position on a team. Right. Someone doesn't become just because you're a great ball thrower doesn't mean you're a great quarterback, because what it takes to be a great quarterback is to be able to respond as the game is like in motion, you know, happening in real time. You're looking at things happening. So in a similar way, I mean, this is what great accompaniment. And that's, and by the way, I would say that the greatest musicians are jazz musicians almost across the board. And that's because of the need for, because improvisation happens in a way in jazz that it really doesn't in other places. So there's like a level of technical proficiency that is required. Plus, you know, this particular musicianship that's required that allows you to listen, riff off of, like you said, to hang back when you need to. Think about all those things in the life of, let's just talk about friendship. You know what I mean? If accompaniment seems too abstracted or too, you know, ministry-ish, you know, but just talk about being someone's friend. What does it take? Sometimes you need stuff. Sometimes they need stuff. And when they need stuff, it's not on you. Like, oh, you know, oh man, my mom just died. What do I do? And like, that's not a time where you're like, yeah, man, I'm looking at this sweater online and I just don't know if I should pull the trigger. It's like, what are you doing? You know? So yeah, there really is that kind of just give and take of just being there for people. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a great way to put it. I'm with you about jazz musicians as long as you put all Oklahoma musicians above jazz musicians, but you're right. Coming in close in second is then jazz musicians. Sorry, Bud, go ahead. I interrupted you.
No, we've mentioned a few times this today, the Church Communications Ecology Project, which is basically this course that we took through Notre Dame, but it brought together people from different parts of the country working in different fields of like Catholic ministry or media, and looked at how media technology creates a sort of ecology that influences the way that we see the world. So, you know, it's not only that that these things are tools that we use, but the tools also shape up and they shape us and impact the way that we interact with the world around us. Dave, this is a very open-ended question, but you know, with your experience,
your favorite kind, by the way,
I know it. With your experience at Notre Dame, when we visited Pittsburgh, when we were looking at the lives of Rachel Carson, Fred Rogers, like how did that experience influence the way that you were doing this project or thinking about this project?
Yeah, that's a really great question. We were pretty aware of the fact that the survey was only being administered online. It was only being administered in English. And very intentionally, we were limiting it to just people in the U.S. So already we had, you know, a very kind of limited scope and we were aware of it. I guess, especially Fred Rogers jumps out to me, as we studied in this way. And, you know, he was so good at isolating his audience and being direct and felt and making it felt like it was just you and him, even though he was distributing his publishing over mass media of television. I think we tried to kind of cull it down and say, you know, are we reaching our audience directly? And whatever we build from this, can we be making sure to kind of create that connection? Because ultimately, So, you know, there's like two levels of the people that we're trying to reach, right? If we're trying to understand from devout Catholics what they need and what we can do to serve them better, it's all in the, we want to do so in order that they can go out and make other disciples, right? So, and ultimately they're serving that person, that end person who's going to be receiving, you know, hopefully receiving that and bearing fruit ultimately. And so if we can be kind of directly connecting, even if we, you know, ultimately what we do is digital or however it is, if we can be somehow connecting with that person so that there's just that much more reinforcement of the one-on-one relationship with people is where we really connect with God. We want to be able to pass that on.
One thing that I think is interesting about this, so, you know, this is about new beginnings. This is the sort of arc of shows that we've been doing. And so it makes sense that the themes that we've been picking up. So new beginnings obviously would be disciples making more disciples or hearing from, you know, a group that doesn't always get airplay to understand what their needs are. You know, everything that we're talking about with you today is about new beginnings, but here we are sort of repeating a theme that has shown up in all of our shows about new beginnings, about how much what went beforehand, either A, how does it survive into the new thing, or how is it the catalyst for something truly new to come from it? So I'm actually thinking about pen pals and writing letters. For this reason, there's so much that went into textual culture and eventually the printing press and like the dominance of text and the sort of industrialization of knowledge. Again, all of the sort of philosophical things we can get into when we consider the Gutenberg galaxy and everything that comes about because of the printing press. But there's also sort of counter narratives within the ascendancies of media. So at the same time that there, you know, everybody was mechanizing the word in the visual print medium, there were still people writing letters, and some people, that was the only way that they had a personal connection with someone else, right? And they would wait months to get these letters. But I don't think any of us would go like, well, they didn't have a real one-on-one relationship just because it wasn't face to face. We sort of give them leeway. We're like, well, there was no other way, right? I mean, it was 1750. What were they going to do? Go, across the ocean? No, they had to write these letters. So it's interesting that in that world, we go, you can have a real relationship with someone via letters. I mean, I hope so, because that's sort of like the letters of Paul make sense only that we believe Paul had a real relationship with these congregations that he hardly ever saw. So it's interesting for us to then fast forward and say, why are we so ready to say you can't have a real relationship one-on-one with someone digitally? And what I'm trying to push back to people is I don't actually think we believe that. I mean, part of this is I have really good friends that I only really met through Twitter. Now, I've since tried to meet them face-to-face. There's always something to that. But I actually think what we have to say is how we do the digital precludes these relationships that we would call one-on-one, but it doesn't have to. And to me, that starts to be interesting right in your data, where it shows there are people who go, hey, I would do spiritual direction, even if it were online, because I think they into it. There's something about, well, if I made the space and I carved digital opportunity to have spiritual formation, well, that wouldn't be like Facebook or Twitter or whatever else it is. That would be different. And if that's the case, I think that's another question we have to start asking is, well, how do we carve that space out and not say the digital is at best a connection to then have one-on-one, can there be one-on-one over the digital?
Yeah, you're bringing up a really good question, Bo. And I think it's, I don't even know where to start on this one. I want to make there be a distinction between a great relationship and one that is leading someone toward the Lord, right? So I agree with you that you can have a great relationship online. Actually, my spiritual director is someone I meet with on Zoom because she lives in Indiana and I live in Connecticut, and it works really well. So I totally agree with you that we can, and you would even say she is leading me towards God, in a way that, you know, I don't necessarily, that's not something that I always enjoy in my in-person relationships. So, mm-hmm. so there is definitely something there. But at the same time, why is it then that sacraments happen in person?
Mm-hmm. I mean,
why is it that we can only receive the sacraments in person? There is something in, why is it that why did Christ become a man named Jesus and walk the earth? There's something about the incarnation that reaches us. And I agree with you that digital can take us so far, but I think that there's something palpable about the in-person experience that gets us even further.
Well, we're coming up on the end here, but what I think is interesting, I'm glad you put it that way. I'm going to act like I meant to do that. I kind of did. of course, there's things that only silence can tell us. And actually, even the medium of speech eventually runs out of things to say, as it were. I mean, that's what's interesting, right, is the word of Christ, you know, the word of God had to become a man because even words wouldn't do. So it's interesting that face-to-face speech is also inadequate. That's what's interesting. Now, and I'm with you to say that there can be more or less adequation, you know, up and down the, so to speak, development of media. But the weird thing is, right, is it's actually only in silence, right? It's God silent on the altar in the sacrament where he speaks best. That's interesting, right? Mm. All other talking, all other speech, all other media goes from that. So, you know, the thing that I throw out to people is until we can be comfortable being silent, which is hilarious coming from me, I don't know if we can do any of the other medium well. And that's that to me, even that, man, I think in your guys' research that you start to see that in some of the numbers. And to pay homage to silence once more, we got to fall silent because we're running out of time, man. Hey, I want to give you time to point people to the good work you guys do at DeSales and this study that you guys are doing. But Dave, it's been wonderful to have you. I wish, you know, I feel like we only really got started, but if you don't mind letting people know where they can go dig into more of your work.
Absolutely. DeSalesMedia.org/discipleship. DeSales like St. Francis. DeSales, so DeSales Media.org/discipleship. The whole thing is there for free. Thank you so much for having me, Bo and Bud. It was a pleasure to be on.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. It was great.
This is The Uncommon Good. We'll be back right after this. Uncommon Good, Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Marr, joining you this week. Thank you for listening to the show. Bud, that was a wonderful, it's just wonderful to get to talk. I mean, people are like, how many of these CCEP people are you going to interview? And the answer is, I'm not sure yet. If they keep answering our calls, you guys, you know, we need to threaten people. We can make this go for a while. But I just have to say thank you, of course, to like Brett and Leslie and people, you know, Notre Dame for making this possible. But this is where that some of those last points Dave was making about friendship and one-on-one. We became friends over, we had to do Zoom and all this stuff like this, but it still goes back to show you the accompaniment, right? The willingness to sort of play the piano while the other person riffs. I feel like that is why we keep going back to the well of talking to these CCEP people, and that I hope that that's what people take from the interview we just got, is those are the sort of people, the sort of relationships you got to get.
No, I was chuckling during the break because when we moved back to the longer format, we were saying, oh, like now we can get in these like substantive interviews. And even with that basically hour-long format with Dave, is like we're kind of touching the surface. And I hope we can have him back on to hear some more of your thoughts about the role of silence and formation, the balance between like textual media and how we use that and how we, you know, be careful with any sort of media that we use. So it's like even with that longer format, just some great conversations. Blessed to be part of it.
Speaking of that, like how can people pray? If you're here listening to Iowa Catholic Radio live or through the app, what are ways that people can join the prayer life of Iowa Catholic Radio?
Yeah, you can download the Iowa Catholic Radio app to pray the rosary anytime, anywhere, but it's also broadcast on air at 6 in the morning, 10 a.m., and then later in the afternoon at 2:55 p.m., we broadcast the Divine Mercy Chaplet.
Once again, I want to say thank you to Mercy College, but also Iowa Catholic Radio for broadcasting the show. Even if you don't listen on the airwaves, it is made possible because of Iowa Catholic Radio. So in your prayerful discernment of ways that you can support people, please consider Iowa Catholic Radio. You can donate at iowacatholicradio.com, or you can call 515-223-1150 or text 515-223-1150 to make donations, to make sure wonderful shows like this and programming, or even consider, you know, your local Catholic station. Maybe that's who you hear us through. But please make sure to support the good work, the good ministries that you're a part of. Thank you. You make that possible. But once more, iowacatholicradio.com, where you can donate. Also 515-223-1150, either calling or texting. Bud, another great show. I want to say one more time, thanks to Iowa Catholic Radio for letting us go back to the long format. It's been wonderful.
Yeah, I hear the NFL is doing flag football for their Pro Bowl. We refuse to compromise. This is all tackle football on air.
Are we going to make debates about who would do better at tackle or flag football?
We should do an Iowa Catholic Radio like staff flag football game.
I don't know if we have insurance to cover all the exploded joints that would like happen well within the first quarter.
Well, John Leonetti says he's a world-class soccer player. I'd like to see him play some North American football.
On that note of fiction, this is the Uncommon Good. May Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, reign in our hearts, our families, city, state, nation, solar system, galaxy, the whole kit and caboodle. This is the Uncommon Good, and we'll be back next week.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard every week on wonderful Catholic stations like this one and anytime on podcast. Just search for The Uncommon Good.
Support for Iowa Catholic Radio and The Uncommon Good provided by Mercy College of Health Sciences. Learn more at mchs.edu.